From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. It is my great pleasure to be sitting in for Tony on this Friday afternoon. We have a busy show for you, as we usually do. I'm going to start by talking with Project Veritas head founder, James O'Keefe. They've obtained and published documents and a presentation material set from a former Facebook insider. It shows that 1 billion, that's billion with a B, Facebook users were deboosted using a system of internal coding. Now, you'll learn what deboosting is all about as I talk to James O'Keefe, fresh from his appearance at the Conservative Political Action Conference this week. In my second segment, this past Tuesday, after 44 Senate Democrats voted for infanticide by blocking the ability of the Senate to even consider the Born Alive Infant Survivor Protection Act. Some of those babies' best champions from the House of Representatives held a pro-life press conference outside the Capitol and spoke from their hearts. I've got their very compelling sound bites. At the bottom of the hour, former Vice President Joe Biden simply called current Vice President Mike Pence a decent guy at a speaking forum yesterday. And for that, Biden got raked over the coals by left-wing activists. I've got the original audio, and I'll talk about why Biden backpedaled on Twitter so fast. Finally, in my last segment, I'll chat with Miriam Ben-Shalom, a lesbian who herself served in the U.S. Army and who takes issue with the 1,500 military personnel who identify as transgender getting tax-funded counseling and expensive cosmetic surgery to the tune of more than $8 million a year. As a reminder, visit TonyPerkins.com for the audio of today's broadcast and for podcasts of previous shows. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins. You can also follow me, if you care to, Sarah P. Perry. And again, because you'll be using it, our Capitol switchboard here in D.C., 202-224-3121, when we talk about why and how the House is going to consider the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act. Well, big tech has struck again. This seems to be a common theme in some of our Friday shows as we wrap up the week's news. And we realize that Mark Zuckerberg was correct when he testified in front of Congress and said that indeed Facebook and Silicon Valley specifically do have a left-leaning bent. Now, perhaps we did not know, all of us, exactly how left that bent was until James O'Keefe and his Project Veritas this week released a groundbreaking report. Here to join me to discuss that report is James himself. James, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
So I'd like to know a little bit about the backstory of this expose. Did the former Facebook insider that you spoke with on camera, and whose face, by the way, I want to tell the listeners, is blacked out, and you can see the entire video itself at projectveritas.com, the entire 19-minute video. How did you get connected up with this former Facebook insider? What was the story of the creation?
We have this website, projectveritas.com/braves, B-R-A-V-E, and you just go on there and submit documents and say you're on the inside of various institutions and basically are willing to blow the whistle, that is to say, strap a camera to yourself. So this individual at the time didn't take one of our cameras. She just took out her phone and took some pictures and chose to – she was shocked by these documents. These documents show them deboosting – this is a word that we needed to look up, but it was a deboost distribution of live stream videos. And it was also something called a troll report that she saw on Facebook's back end system, the system that you don't see. But the engineers had created this troll score that they put on various pages of conservatives, and they created a troll report presentation that laid out words that if you use these words on Facebook, they will take action against your account. These are not racist words. These are not, Ku Klux Klan costumes. These are words they're like very benign, like mainstream media and sort of meme words. So Facebook denies that it censors political speech. Mark Zuckerberg said under oath last year that he doesn't do that sort of thing. But these documents appear to show engineers doing exactly that. And it was more than one individual on the inside who confirmed this. We even found the names of the engineers, and I confronted them in San Francisco earlier this week, where they sort of ran away from me when I walked up to them.
Truth is sometimes unattractive, unfortunately, for some right. people, and they're not willing to confront it. Now, let me talk about this Action Deboost live distribution. Now, I watched the video myself, and I understand that this is sort of a system of coding, and I'm not being a tech individual, and I don't know about those listening, but
right.
for someone who's not a techie, this is actually a form right. of internal coding, right? It's an algorithm that's built right. in place so that
right.
Facebook can run and automatically catch particular pages. And what does that do? That right. action deboosts live distribution. What's the consequence of that?
Correct. So according to the internal system, which I've seen from the insider, the deboost action, when you live stream a video on Facebook, which many people do, it simply takes away the features associated with that. It doesn't appear on other timelines. It's not a live video anymore. It deboosts, quite literally, the video. It reduces its effect and its influence on other people's timelines. And if you're trying to share information with your fellow citizens or your friends or even your professional company, you're trying to advertise what you're saying, people are very upset. Now, in most cases, Facebook notifies you. Let's say you say something stupid and they censor your page. Whether or not they should be doing that, that's a different discussion for a different day. But at least they notify you and you can protest and they'll put your account back up.
Facebook
does a
process.
Pretty good job of that. But
sure.
this is different. This is deboosting you without you knowing it. And this is something they adamantly deny in public because they can't defend this practice. So according to the engineer internally that we read his definition of deboost, it downranks and demotes content. Now, the purpose of this code, and I'm not a techie engineer either, but it's pretty straightforward. It converts live videos into text, and then machine learning goes through the text, identifies the keywords, and the algorithm simply, you know, it's basically a computer language that censors you if you use these words. Now, this program was intended to combat suicide. Obviously, if you're shooting yourself in a live video, we want that censored. We don't want people
right.
to see that. It was intended to combat. Facebook is now claiming that it was intended to do something else. So Facebook appears to be contradicting themselves. And our insider would swear under oath that this was used for political reasons.
Now, I'm curious, and I think I already know the answer, but did she indicate that there was any sort of deboost on what would be considered left-wing or left-leaning or democratically
no.
inclined pages?
So
no. solely
and I'm
right-wing
glad you
pages.
Asked that question. Daily Caller, Stephen Crowder, and Mike Cernovich. Stephen Crowder, we reached out to Stephen Crowder. You know, he said that he went through this sort of thing 2 years ago and settled a lawsuit or a settled legal issue with Facebook out of court. And they're very upset. And my understanding is they're taking legal action. She looked at all these lefty pages and did not see the deboost. And what's more, all of this program was intended to combat like suicide posts. And none of these
right.
people that they've deboosted would, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, suicide, it would appear across the board, I suppose, if we're having a dialogue about that issue. But none of that was on all of the pages. It was only on those right-wing pages. And this troll index score, this troll report written by this high-level executive inside Facebook talking about triggering special features ahead of elections. And people have to remember that Donald Trump won in part because of this so-called meme warfare.
Right.
Memes. The right has appropriated these terms, these memes, frogs and normie and lulls, and these words that Facebook deems to have an effect on elections. Don't take my word for it. You can go to our website and see the documents yourself. And this courageous insider basically was fired from Facebook for taking screenshots of these documents because she said Mark Zuckerberg is lying under oath and I have the proof.
Wow. So let's go back to this trolling index as well. I find this fascinating. So I've heard some pundits say, you know, the left doesn't like memes because essentially the right's funnier, right? So maybe we just use animation better and we're better at that particular type of comedy. But to use this particular index, and one of the engineers who appears in your video, Seiji Yamamoto, has developed this sort of list of prohibited terms, right? And in enough sort of confluence, when they come together, you see enough of them, that individual is tagged as some kind of a, you know, troll. They're pulled off the platform itself. And then what happens? Are there consequences after they're pulled off the platform for being a trolling? Do they have a right of recourse? And B, are there sort of incidental consequences of that?
Well, that's the issue at hand, because according to our insider, she told us that she saw a troll score. And this is we're getting in a little bit into the weeds here, but it's interesting. A troll score was given by this Seiji Yamamoto individual who I confronted in the video, and who, by the way, told me he's worried about his safety, because I'm an investigative reporter asking him questions and he's worried about his safety. Imagine that.
Right.
I should be worried about my safety. The whistleblower should be worried about her safety. $500 billion company, and I run a little nonprofit asking people questions. In any event, Seiji Yamamoto told we learned that he assigned a troll score under what's called the fake account index. So they're assigning they're basically determining, you know, whether or not you are bad content, whatever that means. And the bad content is defined by whether or not you use these words. But if you look at the documents, the words are not racist. The words are like mainstream media, because liberals don't say mainstream media as much as conservatives, right?
Of course, so because we have a vested interest in this.
They're assigning you a score. They're assigning you a score based upon these words, and this is what outraged. I'm at CPAC, and I only have about 30 seconds left because I have another interview immediately after this one. So I've got to
James.
Go.
Let me tell you, it has been fabulous to talk to you. I want to encourage the listeners, go to projectveritas.com to watch the entire exposé. James, thanks for your good work. Keep doing what you're doing. We benefit from your insight and your research. Thank you so much. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry of FRC Action. And coming up next, I'll share some compelling audio from pro-life congressmen and congresswomen who spoke out this past Tuesday following the Senate's refusal to even consider the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. House Republicans want to act. We'll listen to what they have to say after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. It's my pleasure to be with you today. Well, as we know now, the Senate had refused to even consider the Born Alive Infant Survivor Protection Act, essentially legalizing abortion by failing to act, failing to even vote, failing to consider. So now House Republicans are committed to do something in their own chamber. So this past Tuesday, after 44 of their Senate counterparts decided that they would promote infanticide by failing to act, a press conference was held outside the Capitol, and these individuals spoke from their heart. So before I play their compelling sound bites, I want you to join us in a campaign that the Family Research Council is running. We'd like you to join us in sending a newborn baby hat to White House, to the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, as this bill is now before the House of Representatives. It has moved out of the Senate. It is now in the House of Representatives under special order. And our goal is to flood her office with 90,000 newborn baby hats, reminding Pelosi of the humanity of the children who are at stake here. So far, FRC friends have sent nearly 9,000 newborn baby hats. You can join us by going to TonyPerkins.com and click on the End Birthday Abortion banner. For every $9 you give, we will send another newborn baby hat to Pelosi's office. Again, go to TonyPerkins.com and click on the End Birthday Abortion banner. To set the stage, you've got to hear some of the disturbing and moving stories that Republican Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey shared. Let's listen to this clip from Capitol Hill on Tuesday.
In a Florida abortion clinic, Sicloria Williams delivered a live baby girl at 23 weeks. According to Sicloria's lawyer, quote, she came face to face with a human being, and that changed everything. The clinic owner took the baby, who was gasping for air, cut her umbilical cord, threw her into a biohazard bag, and put the bag in the trench. Sicloria later had a funeral for her baby girl, who she named Shanice. We need to provide protection for babies like Shanice and recourse for mothers like Sicloria. In Sicloria's home state of Florida in 2007, 11 babies were born alive during abortions. The CDC reports that in Florida over a 10-year period, 143 babies died after being born during the abortion process. And the number is likely to be a very low estimate due to poor reporting practices. We all remember Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell, who operated for decades under the radar, breaking the law with impunity. He was convicted of killing a number of children and a woman at his abortion mill. Well, the grand jury summed it up so very well. They said Gosnell had a simple solution for the unwanted babies he delivered. He killed them. He didn't call it that. He called it ensuring fetal demise. The way he ensured fetal demise was sticking scissors into the back of the baby's neck and cutting the spinal cord, and he called that snipping. This legislation, the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, builds on the 2002 Act, which did not have sanctions against those who would kill the baby. It holds the woman who gets the abortion harmless. There's no way she will be prosecuted. But it creates a standard of care that that child who is born during the abortion process needs to be treated just like any other preemie, rushed to a hospital, given the kind of resuscitation and care that any other preemie would receive. We call on Speaker Pelosi, as a matter of humanitarianism, to bring up this very important life-saving bill.
I love the passion of Representative Smith, because this is an issue of very clear moral light and dark. Representative Jackie Walorski from Indiana joined pro-life leaders. She renewed the calls for the House to vote on H.R. 962 and actually led the special order, the speeches on the House floor. Let's listen to what she had to say.
And what happened yesterday in this U.S. Senate is absolutely disgusting. It's just disgraceful. Let me tell you really what happened last night, for those of you that weren't here. The Senate last night stood against protecting children. They stood in the way of even having an up or down vote. They stood in favor of legalized infanticide. That is not who we are as Americans. The bills and the laws we've seen in New York and Virginia or in other states are horrifying. That's why we're here today. They're horrifying. We need to be able to vote on H.R. 962, the Born Alive Abortion Survivor Protection Act. This common sense bill would require the medical care be given to children who survive a failed abortion. It's very simple. This should not be a partisan issue, and it should not be controversial. It's just doing what's right for the sake of right. I've long fought to defend the unborn. I'm shocked that we are now defending the right to life of newborn infants. This is extreme. This is inhumane. We must act to protect the rights of all infants. Sadly, Democratic leadership in the House is standing in the way, refusing to even allow a vote.
Congressman Steve Scalise of Louisiana joined in at the press conference. He said this.
When I first heard about this practice and you saw the governor of New York almost having a pep rally describing legislation that would allow a baby to be killed, murdered, after it's born alive, I think the nation was shocked when they heard the governor of Virginia go on a radio show and describe how a family, after the baby's born alive, can have a conversation about killing that baby legally. American families are shocked when they hear that this is legal in many states to kill a baby after it's born alive. Nowhere in America should that be legal. We are a nation that cherishes life. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that first inalienable right is life. And yet, in almost half of the states in this country, a baby who's born alive doesn't have the same legal protection as everyone else. That's got to change. We have to pass Ann Wagner's Born Alive bill. And so I filed, as she said, a rule that in the next few weeks will be eligible to start getting signatures. And that means every member of Congress, anybody who says they're pro-life, ought to sign that discharge petition. And if we get 218 signatures, which I'm confident we can, that will allow that bill to come to the floor for full debate and ultimately a vote. I spoke to President Trump about this bill just a few days ago. And over the weekend, President Trump reiterated his strong support for innocent life and his support for Ann Wagner's bill.
Republican Congressman Roger Marshall of Kansas also spoke from a unique vantage point, and as an obstetrician who's delivered more than 5,000 babies, was there. He is also incensed, and as a devout Christian, said that God will not look kindly upon us for taking the lives of our babies. And I cannot encourage you enough to call the Capitol switchboard 202-224-3121 and urge your representative to pass H.R. 962. This is Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. I'm happy to be sitting in for him today. Yesterday, former Vice President Joe Biden, who is, by all accounts, likely to cast his hat into the presidential race in 2020, gave current Vice President Mike Pence a benign compliment in passing at a forum in global leadership at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. And he was referring to Pence's reception at the Munich Security Conference earlier this month. He simply called him a decent guy. Perhaps the most bland compliment given from one politician to another in the course of modern politics. But for it, Biden was raked over the coals by activists on social media platforms all over the country. Let's listen to his original comment.
From our closest allies, Germany, Angela Merkel stood up and excoriated the United States and said Europe has to think about going it alone because we can't count on the United States anymore. The fact of the matter is, it was followed on by a guy who's a decent guy, our vice president, who stood before this group of allies and leaders and said, I'm here on behalf of President Trump. And there was dead silence.
Now let's listen to what Charlie Kirk of Turning Point USA had to say about Biden's initial comments recently.
We conservatives believe that liberals are wrong, but liberals tend to believe conservatives are bad. The Democrat base believes that conservatives are bad people. Mike Pence, the vice president, is a decent person. And Vice President Joe Biden, he comes from a different time in American politics where it was okay to say that people were decent. Now the Democrat Party is so angry. The Democrat base is filled with rage that you can no longer say that anyone on the center right is decent whatsoever. I don't know if Vice President Biden actually wants to engage in that kind of a Democrat primary, nor do I know if he'll be successful.
Now, I do believe what Charlie Kirk has to say is correct. I do believe there is an elevation of feeling and doctrine over truth to much of what's going on in the Democratic Party right now. But as specifically concerns this situation, Vice President Mike Pence's beliefs, his Christianity, his adherence to biblical doctrine are not hidden. He is very open about all of those. He does oppose same-sex marriage legislation. It's earned him a number of strong opposition comments among the LGBTQ community. His wife does teach art at a Christian school. He makes no bones about his belief. And yet, By all accounts, he is a kind and, yes, decent human being. However, having said something so simplistic, which as recently as 2 or 3 decades ago might have gone without notice, Joe Biden's comments were excoriated on Twitter. One of the individuals to pipe up was actress and former and unsuccessful New York Democratic gubernatorial candidate Cynthia Nixon, who tweeted, "Joe Biden, you've just called America's most anti-LGBT elected leader a decent guy. Please consider how this falls on the ears of our community." Well, former Vice President Joe Biden could not backpedal fast enough and responded within a few minutes that he was, quote, making a point in a foreign policy context at the event, but did acknowledge Nixon's point. Biden went on to tweet, "There is nothing decent about being anti-LGBTQ rights, and that includes the vice president." Now, in this situation, we are fresh off the heels of a surprising revelation about the friendship of Mark Meadows and Congressman Elijah Cummings. And so we find ourselves in a very interesting study in contrast, one between two individuals who are able to disagree civilly with one another while in their chamber and yet can maintain a friendship outside, and an individual who has made in public a very passing, very benign compliment about an elected leader serving in the second highest position in the country in a public forum and has later and recently apologized for such comment. Biden himself has begun to position himself as the moderate, the more centrist option for the Democratic Party. And yet, I do believe this is a harbinger of what the 2020 elections will hold for us if we do not activate our base, if we do not go to the polls and vote. The furiousness, the ire, the animosity of the left has now permeated the entirety of the Democratic Congress, and we are evidencing this every day when individuals like, for example, Representative Rashida Tlaib, who is a freshman congresswoman this year, calls out Congressman Mark Meadows for, among other things, being a racist in an open hearing. We have elevated ourselves or denigrated ourselves, as the case may be, to a lower level of political discourse. We have promises that the left will only get further left, that socialism is the new norm, and that individuals opposed to traditional biblical orthodoxy are the mainstream when, in fact, they are not. NBC News reported, by the way, in 2017 that Biden is friendly with Pence and at that time spoke to him about a month prior to the interview. So now I wonder when they speak again how that phone call will go. You're listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry of FRC Action. Coming up next, we'll discuss the transgender ban on service in the military. We'll be right back.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, and I'm happy to be sitting in for Tony today. According to data obtained by USA Today, the Pentagon has spent nearly $8 million to treat more than 1,500 transgender troops since 2016, including 161 surgical procedures. Well, along with myself, this infuriates my next guest. Her name is Miriam Ben-Shalom, and she is the perfect guest to discuss this particular situation. When she was outed as a lesbian in the U.S. Army, she was given an honorable discharge and went on to team up with a conservative Christian, Kaylee Triller, who I interviewed here on the show recently to form the Hands Across the Aisle Women Coalition, to speak out against the cult of transgender ideology and how it actually minimizes biological women. Miriam, I'm so glad to talk to you today. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Glad to be speaking with you as well. And do me the kind favor of saying hello to your mother and father for me as well. We met quite a few years ago in Milwaukee.
Well, I was going to say, Miriam and I share the same birth city of Waukesha, Wisconsin. So when I connected those dots, let me tell you, I was even more pleased that I could get to talk to you today. Now, I have so many questions about this particular situation, and I've been following this issue very closely. But again, you're uniquely positioned to discuss this issue because truly, people look at the acronym LGBT and assume automatically that someone like yourself would be supportive of something, for example, like transgender service in the military. And I know, for example, that you have written about and spoken on multiple aspects of the transgender ideology and its implications for women. But let's talk specifically about the military first. So how does this particular expenditure, this $8 million for 161 surgical procedures for 1,500 transgender troops, what kind of a bearing does this have not only on military service and readiness, but on morale as well?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the over $8 million that were spent. Trans activists would like to say that $2 million out of $50 billion for a military budget isn't a great deal of money. Yet, in fact, it's a lot more money than many women veterans who served honorably and well can get for any disability that they have. Okay. these people are getting better care than women veterans and also many male veterans at various VA hospitals. Now, let's take a look at what it means to be transgender. There is no definition. It's by self-acknowledgement and by self-identity. There happens to be no known psychiatric or psychological condition for which removing a body part constitutes treatment or cure.
Mm.
Okay? Transgenders themselves say that over 41% of them tend to be suicidal. Okay? So how do you know which ones are and which ones aren't? Do you really want to put a gun in somebody's hands who has an idea about being suicidal?
Right.
Okay, that's their own statistic. Now, let's take a look at another thing. Whether or not you agree with what I am is integral to my being is one thing. However, my sexual orientation is part and parcel of what I am as a human being. It really can't be changed. Conversion therapy has been a dismal failure, as well it should have been. However, transgenderism has nothing to do with one's sexual orientation. It isn't part and parcel of a human being. You know, it has about as much validity if I were, for example, to say, I identify as a redwood tree, give me a really nice big greenhouse so I can flourish. Okay, I'm joking, but do you understand what I mean?
Yes.
What bothers me about this is the fact that Sam Nunn, back in the early 90s, went around and asked service members what they thought of gay people serving, and pretty much he learned that they didn't very much care. But he went around and actually talked to people, and as a result of what they learned, we had the don't ask, don't tell silliness. To date, nobody has asked service members what they think about having transgendered folks serve. Nobody has asked women in service what they might think of having an unaltered male showering with them. Mm. Now, the statistics concerning sexual assault are horrific. 25% of the people who say they've been assaulted will report it, but the vast majority do not because they fear retaliation. They fear punishment. They fear they will not be heard. 25% of all women serving in the military said they had been sexually assaulted, and around 80% say they've been harassed. How do you think they might feel having a male living in barracks with them?
Those numbers are extremely compelling. 25%.
Yes. Okay, I can tell you that statistic comes from Barbara J. Mead and Margaret K. Glenn in Mission Critical, Getting Vexed with PTSD to Work. It's a study that was done in 2013. So this is not a balderdash, I pulled it out of the air statistic, okay?
Now, we know, for example...
It's dismaying to me, furthermore, because there are a vast plethora of illnesses and physical difficulties that preclude a person from serving, including, are you ready, flat feet? How can a person who needs injections of some kind of hormone or something else serve? How is he or she going to do that in a combat situation? If you have surgery and have to dilate that and you have to keep it very clean because it is, in fact, an open wound, and if you do not, it will start healing together again, because it's really not what it says, what they say it is. These are people who are having body parts removed, I don't understand it. I don't think these people should be discriminated against, but I don't think they belong in the military either. And it may happen, there might be one or two who could serve. I don't doubt it, because in the vast experience of humanity, you find good people. But nobody has asked people in the military what they think about this. And what further bothers me is, I guess in D.C., they had a whole bunch of transgenders lobbying. Well, what's interesting to note is not a single one of those people served as transgender. They served as their biological sex. Mm. When they got out of service, all of a sudden, oh, I'm transgender. Okay, but you don't see a male identifying as transgender walking around in service wearing female uniforms. You don't see women who identify as transgender having to meet male PT standards. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So it's a house of cards. I was a drill sergeant. I wouldn't have let one of these men in barracks with any troops that I was training if it was an all-woman barracks. You know, the history of sexual assault and violence, I mean, I don't care what anybody says. Males who identify as trans are still males, and they still exhibit male pattern violence. Why would we already want to subject women who might be in a combat situation to this added level of risk and danger?
Well, and you talked a little bit about the fact that the numbers, they're sort of a disparity, right? So you've got anywhere between 1,100 to 1,500 transgender troops currently serving in the branches of the military, and yet you have a 2.1 million member military. So I think I know your answer to this question, but there is an issue sort of beyond principle here. It goes into the practicality of cowtailing to the small at the interest of sacrificing the safety of the many. And that doesn't seem to make good sense from the standpoint of readiness or lethality, which was Mattis's stated goal in making sure the ban took place in the first place.
I agree with you. Okay. It does not promote readiness. It does not promote unit cohesion. It's like, this is not the same thing as integrating the service like Truman did. This is not the same thing as bringing women into the military with the, at least with the army of the disestablishment of the WACs. Okay. We are dealing with a population that seems to have significant mental health issues.
Yes.
We are dealing with a population that, with the exception of I self-identify as trans, there is no way to understand what this means. They don't even have a definition of what it means. Okay? Nobody knows what it means. If I say I'm trans, I'm trans. Oh, really? So why would you want to place a population, albeit very small, that has rather significant mental health risks in a situation where there could be danger, where there's increased risk and there's increased need to be able to rely? You know, you've got to know that the people have your six. I don't believe that a male identifying as trans would have my six in a combat situation.
Well, and I know
could
that
be
there,
wrong, but I
there are
it.
Characteristics, for example, like my sons have, who have both high-functioning autism and ADHD, that I know will prohibit them from service in the military, and though they desire to serve, there is no constitutionally guaranteed right to service because the ultimate aim, as has been said by individuals smarter and more experienced than me, is to win wars, and that's what has to be our ultimate consideration. Now, I want to switch gears because we've also talked a little bit about this. I want to talk a little bit about sports because we've been hearing a lot and reading a lot about these two high school females, and I'm going to use air quotes, who are up in Connecticut, two track runners who identify as transgender girls, but they are biological men. And so they have created a bit of a brouhaha because they have, among other things, eliminated an opportunity for a college placement by the individual who came in third in the qualifying meet. And I find this very sort of germane to what we're talking about here and whether or not there is a separation between identity and biology, number one, but also, and perhaps more importantly for our discussion, what this does to the notion of female sports. And having made so much progress and having utilized the benefits of Title IX, where do our daughters find themselves? I have a daughter in middle school who is an athlete, who is going into high school, And now am I faced with a situation where I have to think when she tries out for the track team, she could also be running against biological males?
I think it's theft, plain and simple. I wish somebody could explain it to me, how it is that we cannot understand that if you're born with XX chromosomes, okay, and we're not talking about intersex people, which, yes, it's an anomaly, but that has nothing to do with transgenderism, okay?
Right.
If you're XX, you're a female. If you're XY, you're a male. Now, you can put on a wig, you can wear makeup, you can wear a dress, and you can say, you call yourself whatever you will, okay? But that does not change your biology. You can't change your sex. And I don't understand what has happened to the point where people now think that gender supersedes sex, and, you know, some young man who couldn't make it as a male athlete, oh, all of a sudden says he's trans and starts taking prizes at women's track meets. I mean, how long did women work for Title IX and
right.
work so hard to get where we were at? And now men are horning on in and taking that over. Sometimes, and I'm not sure how to say this, there are times when I feel like they're trying to erase women, that they're trying to make us be extinct, except as perhaps breeders or something. And I don't mean heterosexuality. Do you understand what I mean?
Absolutely, I do. To relegate,
like they want to erase us whole and complete.
To relegate our function to singularly one of bearing children. In other words, to take all of the progress that women have made over the past decades, nay, really the past 100 years, and to say that now every opportunity for which we have fought, we have to share with men, seems to do a disservice to the women who went before us who've worked so hard to gain that ground.
I agree. But what's even worse is we don't see commensurate sharing from men.
Correct.
You know, for example, we see males identifying as trans invading women's private spaces, women's locker rooms, women's toilets, you name it, they're there. We do not see commensurate forcing of male-only spaces to become sex-neutral or gender-neutral, whatever term you want to say. So it's men, 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 men. Oops, sorry, you know? It just doesn't make any sense. And I'm angered by the fact that the word gender seems now to have become a euphemism for, in reality, what the word sex, and I'm referring to biology here, actually means. Gender isn't the same as sex. They're two
Miriam,
very different things.
Miriam, I've got to let you go. We're coming up against our last block break. Thank you for coming on and talking with me. God bless you. Thank you for talking and sharing your perspective with us. We have been on Washington Watch today, TonyPerkins.com. Follow Tony at T Perkins. Follow me on Twitter at Sarah P. Perry. And for more resources, go to FRC.org. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.